The first gospel reading is from Matthew, chapter 26, verses 31 through 35. Then Jesus said to them, "You will all become deserters because of me this night, for it is written, 'I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered.' But after I am raised up, I will go ahead of you to Galilee." Peter said to him, "Though all become deserters because of you, I will never desert you." Jesus said to him, "Truly I tell you, this very night before the cock crows, you will deny me 3 times. Peter said to him, "Even though I must die with you, I will not deny you." And so said all the disciples. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise be to you, O Christ. Like most of our deep emotions, shame doesn't begin with whatever event in our lives triggers it in us, right? So just because something happens to us, that's not where shame happens. Shame begins early in our lives. Early in our lives, we learn what makes us feel safe, what gets us attention, what makes us feel loved, and what makes us feel valuable. And maybe that's a role that you have. Maybe you find love and value in being the peacemaker, or the caretaker, or the pretty one, or the smart one, or the fixer, or the rock, or the reasonable one. And we begin to internalize those things. Shame comes from the pressure that is imposed upon our souls by that belief that our love and value comes from various roles that we play or behaviors that we do. And so we have these experiences where we feel valued and loved and safe and joyful. And we have these experiences where we are punished or hurt or ignored, or rejected. And from the very beginning of our lives, we internalize those things as rules. That I must be or do these things in order to be loved or have value. And if I don't do or am not these things, I will be punished, hurt, ignored, or rejected. Now, we don't know much or anything, really, about Peter's childhood and his experiences there. But as we think about the shame that Peter experiences after he denies Jesus, we can at least trace it back a little ways to this moment that was just read. This moment at dinner when Jesus says, "All of you will betray me. All of the shepherd will be struck and the sheep will be scattered." And Peter, for whatever reason, Peter tries to cheer him up. I wonder if Peter wasn't a protector kind of person. I wonder if Peter didn't get his value and love from protecting other people. Right? He's the one who tells Jesus, "Oh no, you're never going to go to the cross and die." Right? He's the one who pulls out the sword and chops off the soldier's ear when Jesus is arrested. And in this moment, he says, "Oh, no, no, I will never do that. I will be there to protect you." So often we try to cheer other people up if our inclination is one of a protector. We try to cheer other people up by making promises that we can't keep. Right? "Oh, it'll all work out. It'll be fine. You'll be healed. Everything will be totally okay." Things that we cannot guarantee or fulfill. We do that just to make someone else feel better in the moment. It's important to note as we read this story that Jesus didn't ask for this, right? Jesus didn't expect Peter to stay with him and protect him. Jesus didn't demand that Peter be faithful and not run away like the rest of the sheep. In fact, Jesus expected the very opposite. Jesus' sadness and about his abandonment didn't mean that he loved Peter or the disciples any less, or that they had any less value. It's Peter's own pride and the pressure that has been put on him by either by himself or others, that pressure to protect, that sets up his plunge into shame. His belief about himself that I am and must be the faithful disciple, the protector. And I only have value if I have courage, if I'm the hero, if I can protect those around me. We set ourselves up for shame when we root our identity and our value and our belovedness in anything other than this. I am a beloved child of God. I am a living image of the Creator by God's grace, who relies with each breath on God to sustain me. Our identity and our belovedness and our value is purely a gift. When we try to be or do beyond that, whether it's because of others' expectations or our own, we set ourselves up for failure, and we set ourselves up for shame. And so now in this moment, I invite you to reflect on these questions. Where in my life do I feel pressure from myself or others to perform? And how does that pressure affect me? Let's take a moment and reflect in the loving and gracious presence of God.
The second gospel reading is from Luke, chapter 22, verses 54 through 62. Then they seized him and led him away, bringing him into the high priest's house. But Peter was following at a distance. When they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them. Then a servant girl, seeing him in the firelight, stared at him and said, "This man also was with him." But he denied it, saying, "Women, I do not know him." And a little later, someone else, on seeing him, said, "You are also one of them." But Peter said, "Man, I am not." And then about an hour later, still another kept insisting, "Surely this man also was with him, for he is a Galilean." But Peter said, "Man, I do not know what you're talking about." And at that moment, while he was still speaking, the cock crowed. The Lord turned and looked at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, "Before the cock crows today, you will deny me three times." And he went out and wept bitterly. The Gospel of the Lord.
Can you imagine that look Jesus gave to Peter? Some of us, I think we know exactly what it looked like. You've gotten that look maybe from a parent, a coach, a teacher, a spouse, a friend. Now the text doesn't say anything though about Jesus' look and what it involved or what it looked like. It doesn't say that the look was sad or disappointed or angry. And I think what I get from that is that it's not as much a matter of how Jesus felt about Peter in that moment, but the fact that Peter was seen. Sometimes in the look of someone else, we see ourselves. We don't always like what we see in that look. And in this moment, Peter has an important choice. Because shame is not about what we've done. Whether we've done what we should or shouldn't, whether we've been courageous or cowardly, whether we've been faithful or sinful, shame is about how we respond to the idea or reality of being seen. Right? How do I respond to this idea that someone might see this about me or know this about me? Or how do I respond when someone has seen this in me and knows this of me? The hallmark of shame is hiding. We see it in the garden right at the beginning. Adam and Eve, they know they've done wrong, and the idea of being seen by God moves them to hide. They can't fathom. They just can't deal with that idea that God will see them in their sin. They don't like the idea of being seen by each other either, right? The fig leaves come in. They need to hide from each other. They need to hide from God. They cannot be seen. And we hide because we believe that if we were really seen and known, we would be rejected or punished or unlovable. And again, that belief comes from the deeper belief that our love and our value and our identity is based in our performance. And for most of us, this isn't just about a single event. This isn't just about something we have done. In this case, in this story, we're looking at Peter and this one thing he did in denying Jesus. But for many of us, we have built our lives around this fear of being seen. For a lot of us, this knowledge that we've done wrong actually becomes a belief that we are wrong. Not just that people will know what we've done, but that people will see who we are. That becomes our reason for hiding. And even if there's not some event, something we've done wrong, we still hide. We still avoid relationships where we are known, where we are seen. And sometimes we literally hide. Sometimes we just avoid people. We lock ourselves up in our houses and we don't go out. But sometimes people hide in plain sight. Sometimes people who are the life of the party, who tell all the jokes, who always have another story to tell, sometimes those people are still hiding. They control what you see. And as long as they're telling the story or telling the joke or people are laughing or people are wanting to be around them, they don't have to know what's deeper down and inside. But when we hide, it severs connection. It destroys relationship. These two things that we need to be human, connection and relationship. Brené Brown talks about the impact of shame. She says, "Shame hates it when we reach out and tell our story. It hates having words wrapped around it. It can't survive being shared. Shame loves secrecy. When we bury our story, the shame metastasizes. It gains power over us." All of this is about hiding, is about not connecting and not being known and seen by others. That's what shame thrives in. And so you have these two men in this story. You have Peter and Judas. Both of them betray Jesus, and Jesus knows it. He tells Judas, he knows exactly what he's doing before Judas leaves to the guards, and he looks at Peter, even as Peter's denying him. And both stories of Judas and Peter are in all four Gospels. But what's interesting about that is, you know, Judas didn't have a say in how his story was told, right? We know how Judas's life ended. He took his own soon after this. But Peter did. Peter did have a say in how the story was told. In fact, Peter is believed to be the one behind the Gospel of Mark who was telling that story that Mark wrote down. And the thing is, this story of Peter's denial is the kind of story that leaders who are operating out of shame have other people sign a non-disclosure agreement about. That non-disclosure agreement's in the news, right? It's when people who have power and authority don't want their story told. They don't want to be seen or known. And this would have been the perfect opportunity for Peter, who starts off from the very beginning is a leader in the early church. It would be so natural, so normal, so sinfully human for him to have said, "Guys, if we tell this story, I'm going to lose that authority. We're going to lose authority as disciples. We all deserted him. Let's not tell this story." And yet, like I said, it's in all four Gospels. Peter just says to the world, "I denied the Lord, but here I am, the rock of the early church." So Paul says, "I will boast all the more in my weaknesses." We hide because we believe that if we were really seen and known, that we would be rejected or punished or unlovable. But the gospel tells us that we are seen by the one who sees all. And like Peter, while we may feel exposed by that fact at first, God sees us in all our imperfection, in all our limits, and in all of our sin. He sees us with mercy, compassion, and love. To be continued. But let's reflect on these questions now. How do I respond when someone sees my sin or weakness? Or how do I simply prevent others from seeing my sin and weakness? And then who in your life really knows you? Who can see you at your best and your worst in love?
The third gospel reading is from John, chapter 21, verses 15 through 19. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" And he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." And Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." And he said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. And after this, he said to him, "Follow me." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise be to you, O Christ.
Brené Brown again, who incidentally refers to herself as a shame researcher. How's that for an upbeat life? She writes, "Courage starts by showing up and letting ourselves be seen." Over the past few weeks, I've been struck in this series about Jesus' resurrection encounters with his disciples. Just how intimate these scenes are. And we talked about how Jesus speaks the name of Mary, Mary. And how Jesus is at a table eating with Cleopas and the other disciple on the road to Emmaus. And how Jesus invites Thomas to see and to touch his wounds. And now with Peter, this scene on the beach. I mean, you definitely get this sense in this scene of Peter being seen. And it's not the being seen of that look across the fire as he was denying Jesus, but it's this being seen of being close, of being known, of being invited, especially away from the group, to have this talk. And within this moment that Peter and Jesus have together is this call and this invitation to love and to serve. I've been a part this year of it's called the Foundations of a Servant Leader. It's a cohort of other pastors, and we meet every other week by Leadership Toledo is the group who does it. And in this group, we have been doing some of this work that I'm asking you and inviting you to do, of kind of going deep and where does our stuff come from? Where does our sense of identity and value and belovedness come from? And it's not always a fun journey, but it starts with this assumption, this belief. And I'm quoting this from our workbook. It says, "We believe that when we align ourselves in this way, our actions, our thoughts, and core of who we are, the posture of our life becomes that of a servant leader. When we carry this alignment and walk with this posture, the question we ask to our colleagues, businesses, families, and communities is, how may I serve?" And when I read that, I was really struck by that, because I don't always sense that posture in my own life. The opposite posture that we're trying to kind of get rid of more is the question, what can I get? What can I take from life or from this moment or from this person? But a human being, and we see this because Jesus is our perfect image, not only of who God is, but who human beings are as images of God. His posture was that of a servant. And it's our shame and it's our fear of being known and seen that keeps us from truly being able to serve well and to serve in love. Peter has been misaligned. He has, on one hand, this love for Jesus, and I don't know that ever is gone. I mean, even as he denies Jesus, the love for Jesus is still there. This is why he weeps when he's seen. But he also has this fear of people. And in that moment, he acts more out of his fear than out of his love, and that's being misaligned within yourself. That's being disintegrated in our souls. Because he's not acting out of love, he's acting out of fear. And even though Jesus has been raised, he still hasn't truly dealt with that. But Jesus, in this moment, sees Peter and realigns him. It's almost as though with each denial, a different bone in Peter's body was broken. And now Jesus is setting those bones back into alignment with each question. Do you love me? Feed my lambs. Do you love me? Tend my sheep. Do you love me? Feed my sheep. And as Jesus realigns Peter, he's aligning him in the shape of a servant. Feed, care for, tend. And now Peter still doesn't totally get it, but he will. He will. Because Peter, again, as Jesus prophesies in this scene here, Peter again will confront fear and death. And rather than deny Jesus or lash out as a protector, Peter will take up his cross, and Peter will be martyred. Because Peter, by that point in his life, knows deeply and can live out this truth, that for the one who is aligned in their soul with love, death cannot win. For Christ is risen. He is risen indeed.
Alleluia.
So now we ask, where is my approach to life on the spectrum of what can I get to how may I serve? And what keeps us from moving towards that servant leader end of the spectrum? Let's reflect in the love of God. The last thing I want to note about that spectrum is that you can't move towards the how may I serve side of that spectrum just by doing servant things. Because that spectrum is not just about what we do, it's about our posture towards the world. It can only come from being realigned in those places and those beliefs about our value and our belovedness and our identity and who we are. And that can only happen when we go there and cooperate with this gentle but surgical hands of the Spirit of Christ in our souls. Because we can serve and do servant things and be bitter or self-righteous. And we can do servant things while being joyful and loving and compassionate. And how we do the servant things comes from the alignment that we have with the Spirit of Christ in our souls. And so let's pray together. Gracious God, thank you for receiving us simply because we are yours. Simply because you are love and you have made us and you delight in the very life that we have. I pray that you would give us the humility and the courage to dig deeper, to allow ourselves to be seen by you, and to allow ourselves to be seen by others, so that we can come to a point where our posture is like that of Peter or Paul, where we can say, here's my story. Here's who I am and all my weakness and all my sin and all my limitations. Here I am, a child of God. How may I serve? Amen.